This is Lars. Thanks again for checking out my podcast. Enjoy your day and the show, and let's make America great again. Are you approaching retirement, or maybe you've just changed jobs? If so, you'll probably now have control of your 401k or IRA. Would you like to buy some property, notes, loans, start a new business, or even buy crypto? You can with a self-directed IRA. For more than a decade, I've been telling you about setting up a self-directed IRA through IRA Advantage. And while you may now hear other companies say they offer self-directed IRAs, you need to find out if they're truly self-directed. With a truly self-directed retirement account, you can make any investment the law allows. Whether you're talking about true diversification, starting your new business, or investing in private holdings, IRA Advantage through a truly self-directed IRA can make that happen. Take it from me, Lars. You've worked hard for your money. IRA Advantage will work hard to keep it yours.
Would you like to learn more about truly self-directed IRAs? Then visit IRAAdvantage.com. View our videos and call IRA Advantage. That's IRAAdvantage.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you live from our nation's capital, and boy, is she a beauty. The outside of the building, of course, not the ugly stuff that goes on inside the building, but here we are on top of the building, just about 1,000 yards from the Capitol, where NBC News is housed, Fox News is housed, C-SPAN, and all the rest of that, just to give you the physical setup. Union Station is a bit to my left, the Capitol Dome to my right, a beautiful American flag. And we are here to talk about illegal aliens. But I've got a few things I've got to unload on you about the Pacific Northwest. So welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. I'm glad to get your phone calls at 866-HEY-LARS. I mean, even though we've got some great guests today, including top people in law enforcement, top people in government, top people who are just experts on the subject matter, there's a lot to say about what's going on in the Northwest. And I've got a little update that I want to give you about the crazy stuff in Washington State. They want to take existing state employees. Remember, Jay Inslee fired all the people who wouldn't take the jab. And we've said, well, if the pandemic is over, because Joe said last Sunday night the pandemic is over, you know, Slow Joe POTUS, the president of the United States, Slow Joe, he said the pandemic's over, except when it's not, whenever it's convenient. But here you have all these state employees who were told take the jab or get fired, and Jay Inslee fired all these people. So the only people left are the ones willing to be subservient enough to have taken the jab. But now, for some reason, they have decided that they have struck a deal. Hey, guess what? A labor union was involved. Under a deal, Washington State employees would get $1,000 bonuses for receiving a COVID-19 booster shot. Now, hold on a second. I just want to ask you logically. If you've already eliminated all the people who were sensible and said, I'll take the jab if I decide to, but you can't tell me to, and they said, well, in that case, you're fired. All you've got left are compliant people anyway who've already agreed to do it. Why do you need to give them $1,000 to get them to take a jab that they already understand if they don't take it, they get fired? Because Joe wanted to make the jab mandatory or you get fired, but the booster is voluntary. You can't get fired for it. So in other words, we've got two different rules. One rule says you have to take the jab or you get fired. The other rule says, but on the booster jab, which is the same stuff. Well, I guess it's a little bit improved, but not tested on humans, only on mice. Just remember, never tested on humans, just on a bunch of mice, that you can take the booster voluntarily. So we're going to have to pay you $1,000. This is the deal. The agreement between the state and the Washington Federation of State Employees, they give big to Democrats, also includes 4% pay raises in 2023, 3% pay raises in 2024, a $1,000 retention bonus, plus a $1,000 booster bonus. Gee, do you think that Jay Inslee has figured out how to give money away in large quantities to state employees? I would say so. Inslee announced this month that all pandemic emergency orders will end by October 31, just over a month from now, including state vaccine mandates for healthcare and education workers. But he says a vaccine mandate will continue to be in effect for workers at most state agencies. You're going to not require it of the people who work in healthcare, but the folks who work at the highway department or the folks who are in the bureaucracy processing the massive paperwork or unemployment claims from Nigerians who want hundreds of millions of dollars, they have to take it, but the healthcare workers don't. Now, if somebody, maybe a naysayer, could explain to me the logic of that, I'd be glad to hear it. By the way, I don't usually do weather. I've never been a weatherman in my life. I'm sometimes mistaken for Ken Ackerman, who is a weatherman, but I have to tell you, the weather has been weird today. Yesterday, it was blistering hot in Washington, D.C., but a big, solid blue sky. This morning started out with rain, threatening clouds. The rain was blowing sideways, and it was hot. It was like 80 degrees and raining. That gives you an idea of the kind of weather. That's because some of the founders of this country decided to locate our national government in a swamp and swampy places with hot, humid weather. What a great decision. Not very green of them because it requires a lot of air conditioning back here. And I trust me, nobody's got their air conditioner set back here to 80 degrees. I guarantee you walk into a senator rep's office, you walk into Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's office, her thermostat is not set at 80 degrees, although that might actually match her IQ if you were to be able to check that. So that's one issue. $1,000 to take the booster, because it's no longer required of some and is required of others. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, I'm glad to have you. Live on the Radio Northwest Network at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our Twitter poll today found at Lars Larson Show. I just want to ask you this. Should American cities that declare themselves sanctuaries take the bulk of the new illegal alien refugees? I would say yes to that. There's a brand new poll out, and what it says is that Americans are not crazy about all these illegal aliens. 63% of likely voters in a poll just released today by National Review agreed that sanctuary cities should have to share the burden, including 38% who strongly agreed, 25% who somewhat agreed, almost 25% disagreed, including 14% who strongly disagreed. Hold on. You live in a sanctuary city. You elected the nitwits who are running the city, and you say, but you shouldn't make us take all the illegal aliens. Well, why not? You embraced it as sanctuary. Yes, we want to provide sanctuary, just not in our neighborhood. This is the Martha's Vineyard. I may have to shorthand it. This is the MV. The MV point of view. Yes, we love refugees as long as they stay in somebody else's neighborhood. Now, can you imagine that kind of NIMBY attitude? We have to be humane to them, unless they're in our neighborhood, in which case we'll get the National Guard and boot them out. So, should American cities that declare themselves sanctuaries take the bulk of the new illegal alien refugees, so-called? I would say yes. You can vote any way you like. At Lars Larson Show, brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Yesterday, I asked you if the wealthy and the powerful of Martha's Vineyard could use the military to deport illegals. Should the rest of America do the same? I said yes. So did 94% of you. Only 6% of you said no. And I do want to offer a big thank you to Butcher Boys today for sponsoring our special broadcast on this Thursday right here at Feet to the Fire. Butcher Boys is great. If you like barbecue, if you just plain like meat, Butcher Boys is fantastic. It is great to have them backing us up as we're at Feet to the Fire, put on by the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Now, coming up in just a moment, I want to make a point to you that doesn't get made by the mainstream media and probably won't get made tonight in the Pacific Northwest. You know, we have 1,000 new American citizens joining us today. They took the oath of citizenship today in Portland. Seattle had a similar ceremony earlier this year. I want to ask you something about them. Were they chumps to say, I'll go through all the time and the effort and the money and the lawyers and the forms and the intrusive nature of all these questions. I'll take the test. I'll swear the oath. I'll study all that information. Were they chumps to do it that way when they could have just jumped the border and got it for free from Slow Joe POTUS? Back in a moment on the Radio Northwest Network, you're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead, fish wrapper, or mainstream media bias.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I find it a little bit ironic that here we are at Feet to the Fire talking about illegal aliens who are invading our country. And back at home, 1,000 people take the oath of citizenship today in Portland. I mean, this is the kind of ceremony that happens in big forums like that, 1,000 people at once, all becoming U.S. citizens by taking the oath of citizenship, and in smaller ceremonies as well. Seattle had one earlier this year. About 800,000 immigrants, legitimate immigrants, not illegal aliens, do this every single year in America. Constitution Week seems like the perfect time for that kind of event. Now, I've been doing my radio shows, as I said, from Capitol Hill for Feet to the Fire, trying to draw attention to the urgent problem that literally threatens America's very existence, an invasion by millions of illegal aliens who are not doing it the legal way, unlike the people who took the oath today who did it the right way. It would be nice tomorrow, when most of the media will likely mention these 1,000 new citizens that were sworn in today in Portland, and point out the contrast. They did it legally, at great personal expense in time and money and effort. They come with a green card that allows you to legally hold a job, and if you obey all the laws for the next 5 years and then study and take a test, you become a citizen. By contrast, those millions of illegals that Joe Biden has invited to break our laws and spit in the face of those who did it the right way, the legal way. Not only that, legal immigrants are vetted for criminal record. They're vetted for job prospects. They're vetted for connections to the community to get them started and on their feet in a new country. That's a good thing. It makes them good contributors to the community. Illegal aliens commit far more murders and rapes and assaults and robberies and other crimes than those who do it legally. Now, which group would you rather have living next door? Glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. I mean, we do have some great guests coming up today, but I want to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our question of the day, then, out of what I just told you, if all those people who come to America legally, is there any reason to allow millions more to cheat the system and cut to the head of the line? I don't think there is. I mean, what's the justification? If the average number of people allowed to have a green card and come to America legally is over 1 million per year, and just average per year, 800,000 of them turn into citizens. They can decide to do it or not. I used to have a producer that I worked with, a young lady, and she was a Canadian citizen. She never wanted to be an American citizen. I never understood why. I didn't bother her about it. I just said, you could be a citizen. She goes, I know. I'm not going to. I said, okay. It's not my place to tell you to do it or not. But it always seems strange to me. You want to come to a place because of all the wonderful things that it offers. And then you say, but I don't want to be a member there. Well, why not? You don't want to take on the responsibility? You don't want to have the right to vote? I mean, if you become a naturalized citizen, you can vote. You can run for office. You stay a foreign national? Well, as we told you yesterday, one committee in Congress, a Congress that's currently controlled by the Democrats, has already passed out a bill that if it is passed by the House, passed by the Senate, signed by Joe Biden, becomes law, will allow foreign nationals to vote in our federal elections. Now, we've talked about some of the cities around America that have been experimenting with this, where they say, well, we want people to be able to vote in local elections, like county commission and school board and things like that. The Democrats are now so panicked by what's going on. They're so anxious to remove some of the damage they know they're going to take in November. They're saying, how about if we give illegal aliens the right to vote? No, that's foreign nationals who they see someday being amnestied, legalized, given the right to vote, given the right to get all the advantages. And then at that point, what point is there in somebody saying, well, I want to come in legally? Well, the legal way is just to cheat your way across the border. Joe says so. And I'd love to talk to a naysayer about that, about whether or not that's a legitimate way to do things. Now, today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
The way has been paved by Trademark Paving. Just pave it. Serving Southwest Washington. Don't stop, grow.
I'm going to give today's Daily Grill to a Portland art festival that has actually drawn some national attention, and here's why. As Fox News says, one event at a Portland art festival this coming weekend being hosted is that it be free or by donation for black folks. That's the language that they're using, black folks. But everybody else pays $80. Now, I thought that was illegal. In fact, I still think it's illegal to say we're going to give something for free if you have black skin, but it costs you $80 if you're white. The Black Feast, Black Imaginarial, is an event with the Time-Based Art Festival being hosted on this coming Sunday, a culinary event celebrating black artists and writers through food. A description of the event says, guests will participate in an experience that weaves together food and art, where an event host works with black artists to create a multi-course vegan, gluten-free meal based off the artist's work. However, the webpage for the event says it is free or by donation for black citizens, $80 for all else. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Mobile Joe's RV Collision. Get back on the open road and back to your adventure with Mobile Joe's. No body damage, too big or small. Collision or paint repairs, Mobile Joe's RV Collision fixes them all. Andrew writes in from Bellingham, listening on KGMI and the Radio Northwest Network. Lars, I just watched some snippets of the recent congressional hearings about oil and climate. When the left has no answers, which is often, they attack the person asking the question. Often the attack is framed by racial blinders and bolstered by the lack of knowledge. To detract from obvious ignorance, the response is done at high volume with lots of phony outrage. It makes for great political theater, but as for guiding substantial debate, I find it lacking. I was surprised to see squad member Rashida Tlaib repeatedly make the mistake of Maxine Waters when questioning Jamie Dimon, CEO of the largest bank in the world, and that's Chase Manhattan, in a hearing ostensibly about banks leading to the petroleum industry that fuels our economy and maintains our high standard of living. Squad member Tlaib uses the opportunity of the hearing about oil to show her ignorance about the government monopoly on student loans. She blamed the banks for the student loan defaults. Banks haven't been in that business since Obama took over. Dumb and dumber on display. Tlaib's performance was as comical as it was embarrassing. No wonder she's held in such high esteem by the left. Perhaps for a better perspective, they should follow what's happening in Europe and observe the effects after Putin stopped selling natural gas to them. Signed, Andrew Peller. Glad to be with you on a Thursday. We call this Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I'm glad to take your calls as well at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Coming up in a moment, the former CEO and acting commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, Mark Morgan, joins me right here at Feet to the Fire on Capitol Hill. And you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you live on Capitol Hill today, the Capitol Dome in Clearview. It's a windy day, and I guess I could say the bad wind is blowing, but it's probably for the Democrats this November, if I have to interpret the weather that way. And sitting right in front of me is Mark Morgan, the former Chief Operating Officer and Acting Commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, now a visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation and here at FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Mark, how are you?
Lars, I tell you, to be honest, I was telling you before, every morning I wake up angry, pissed off, and frustrated. Other than that, it's a good day.
And is it all on this issue that we've been talking about?
It absolutely is.
I want to ask you something. How can people wrap their heads around the idea that we can see with our own eyes, even for the little media coverage it's generating,
right,
millions coming across, creating havoc in cities, not just Martha's Vineyard, and you know, God bless those poor multimillionaires. But, I mean, big cities that are being overrun by people,
right,
and if they're sanctuaries, they feel obligated to say, well, as long as it's Democrats sending them to us, it's okay. Big and then Mayorkas shows up in that big building over there and says, no problem, we've got it under control, and so does right. Kamala Harris, and so does Joe Biden.
Yeah, 5.2 million illegal aliens have tried to break into our country in 19 months. A million have gotten away. We know we have a fentanyl epidemic that's killed 107,000 Americans. The leading cause of death at 18 to 45 is fentanyl. We know that 95% of fentanyl comes from the southwest border. We know that every single day, criminals, murders, rapists, pedophiles, gang members are breaking the border, evading apprehension, making their way to every town, city, and state. And we know there's an increased national security vulnerability because of our open borders. And what is this, Vice President? Say, no problem, the border's secure. It drives me crazy. Not just because substantively they took the most secure border in our lifetime, Lars, and they intentionally unsecured it, but they're also blatantly, flat-out lying to the American people about it.
Well, and the people in my business, not talk radio, but last Sunday night, Scott Pelley had Joe Biden right in front of him for his first sit-down in 200 days. He asked some good questions, stopped short of where he could have gone, but he could have said, Mr. President, millions have come in. Let's not even debate how many. I agree with you. The 5-2 sounds right to me based on what CBP says.
Yep.
Millions have come in. They are coming in unvetted, and we know that some are on the terror watch list, just as you just read off.
Yep.
And the fact is that you're not doing anything about it. And press him on that question till you get an answer. Are you planning to change this? Why won't you change this? How is this good for America? Now, any ordinary local reporter on a local TV station would have asked those questions. Scott Pelley sat right there and thought, I've got a great grab. I mean, any president of the United States for an interview is a great grab, no matter the party. I asked for 9 years for an Obama interview. I would have loved, I would have been nice as pie.
Respectful, right?
But I would have asked him hard questions. Yep. They never press him on this.
Never, never. And you see the dichotomy. Let's look at how the media treated President Trump. Let's be honest, right? And I remember when I was commissioner, every 30 days, I went out and I gave the stats, and I went out and I held a large press briefing, and I invited everybody, and I took them all. And I can tell you, the mainstream media, they didn't give me a pass. They had not just one follow-up, but they had multiple follow-ups, and they had a narrative. They were asking just, and a lot of times they were actually disrespectful. So the dichotomy, and I think the majority of Americans see that for what that is, and they know that the mainstream media, what I refer to, Lars, they're just an extension of the Democratic Party. I mean, let's be honest.
They are. I mean, I imagine they would have. Why are you locking kids up in cages and saying, well, I didn't invent the idea. That was Obama.
That's exactly what they did. And I would talk about, you know, again, they would always focus on stuff that was just absolutely a false narrative. Like, for example, so they would say if I wanted to stop illegal immigration, so then all of a sudden I don't like brown people or I'm a racist. Right. And they would say we weren't compassionate. Well, the issue is that if you actually support illegal immigration, your compassion is misguided. Okay. Because actually the most inhumane thing you can do for the migrants themselves is to support and incentivize illegal immigration. Under this administration, Lars, we've talked about it before, in 19 months, there have been more dead migrants stacking up at our southwest border.
700-800?
Over a thousand. And just think, as smuggling increases, so does the sexual assault and rape of young women and children exponentially expanded. The human trafficking atrocities has exponentially expanded as the human smuggling goes up. But yet, you don't hear anything about that from this administration. And again, the most inhumane thing you can do is support illegal immigration for the migrants, let alone Americans are dying because of it as well.
You know, it's funny. I was telling our home base is Portland, Oregon, right? Okay, it has. I know it's now the punchline that replaced Cleveland. But one of the things that happened today, 1,000 people took the oath of citizenship. And I just said, look, hold on. These people did it legally. They did it at great time, expense, effort. You want intrusive? You think Facebook is intrusive? You say, I want to move into your country, or I'm marrying this woman. I'd like her to become a citizen. They're going to be asking you all, and they're going to be challenging you. Are you really getting married to her?
That's right.
Is this a sham marriage? All these people went through all that effort, and I feel like if the media was doing its job, they'd go in and, of course, they'd celebrate the fact that these people have now become American citizens.
Absolutely.
But they might also say, by the way, what do you think about the fact that 5 million people in the last 19 months just got, effectively, the same thing you got for nothing?
That's right. I talk to those individuals all the time, Lars. And some of the people that are the most angry are those. The people that came here lawfully, legally, and went through the process. And look, I'm good having a discussion that, we could probably improve our legal immigration process. I think that would be a fair discussion to have, right? But look, and let's go back to compassion. We swear in about 1 million migrants a year to be legal U.S. citizens.
Yep.
There's no other country on the face of the planet that comes near that.
Well, not one you'd actually – I imagine Yemen could take in 1 million. But how about this? Any country you'd actually want to live in.
Right, a good point. Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I stayed corrected. You know, you're right.
Anybody want to move to Putin's Russia now? Probably not.
That's exactly right. And that's why I keep going back. People have to understand that the compassion for the vulnerable migrants is misplaced, because not only do the migrants themselves suffer, but look, the reality is, as illegal immigration goes up, our ability to secure the border goes down. Every single time a single illegal alien comes, a border patrol resource or other resources are pulled off the front line to deal with that. The cartels know it. Large areas of the border go unsecured. The cartels literally gain operational control. And what happens? Drugs pouring across, killing Americans, criminal aliens pouring across. Again, murders, rapists, pedophiles. And of course, we know that countless individuals on the FBI's terror screening database have entered this country.
I'm talking to Mark Morgan. He's the former CEO or COO and acting commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, now at Heritage. What's really troubling to me is the idea that, and I know my audience knows, I don't particularly like Joe Biden and his policies.
Right.
Okay? If he was my next door neighbor and all I complained about was his lawn, I don't care.
Right.
But the things he's doing to my country are ugly and evil. So they expect me to be negative toward him. But is it fair to say, is it accurate to say that Joe Biden is now facilitating the greatest amount of human trafficking into this country that has ever happened in the country's history?
Yes, it's correct, and it's not hyperbole. Let me give you an example to bring that home. A 26-year veteran in the United States Border Patrol, for 26 years, Lars, he's woke up every single day, put his life on the line to do his job to protect this country. And he told me one time, so he was getting ready, and he was looking at his uniform, getting all squared away, and he looked up, and he looked himself in the mirror, and he said, you know, I realized for the first time in 26 years, I am now part of the world's largest smuggling organization. That's coming from a 26-year veteran Border Patrol agent, and it's because of this administration's policies. They have literally removed their national security mission and turned them into a welcome travel agency. That's where we're at right now.
He does it for a civil servant salary,
yep. Yeah,
and
yep.
He could end up like Brian Terry with a bullet in his head.
That's exactly right.
And he has to tell his family that.
Yeah. I tell you, when I was Commissioner Lars, I'm glad I went to way too many funerals. So when I say that they're literally, the border agents out there risking their lives, it's not hyperbole. It's happening all the time.
Brian, thank you very much.
You bet. You bet.
Mark. Mark right. Morgan, Lars. Former acting chief operating officer and acting commissioner for U.S. Customs and Border Protection. We're live at Feet to the Fire. That's what this event is about. We've got a lot of things to talk about, though, and you know, we'll get to those in a moment. Your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to be with you and glad to serve the states of the Pacific Northwest, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the past 22 and a half years. And if you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. We're live on Capitol Hill today. Yeah, we're going to head home tomorrow. The fact is, we're here and we've come here for the better part of the last 15 years, missed a couple because of the pandemic. But this is an important event, and if you aren't hearing the reasons here, I'd love to hear the naysayer who tells me we have nothing to worry about letting millions of people in, including criminals and drug dealers and human trafficking and the children who are hurt because of this, because it's not unusual to hear both Democrats and Republicans bemoan the horrible damage that is done by human trafficking of adults before you even get to the subject of the damage done to children who are trafficked. And then you say, how do we let all this happen? Well, we let it happen because we have a president who's decided for political reasons to let millions of people in and to aid and abet the Mexican drug and trafficking cartels in a way that nobody has in American history, and it's not a good thing. Let's go to the phones. 866-439-5277. Chris, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, love your show. Well, it just strikes me that there's only four states on the southern border, California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. So if we had a federal effort called the CANT program, where we just stopped them in those four states, I think we'd have to really make some progress. The problem is two are Democratic and two are Republican. One other thing to consider, when we ended the war with Mexico, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo was supposed to have given Baja California to the United States. That's something I'd like to see be renegotiated as well.
That's when I've read a lot about that treaty, and when part of Mexico, a big part of Mexico, was actually controlled by the United States for a period of time, and then of course like we always do, gave it back. But let me ask you this: when you say stop it in those states or stop it at those states, because when you say we're going to take an exclusively federal decision And there's an important reason that we divide jobs up, right? Like in my job, I'm not a radio engineer. So if there's an engineering issue, I call an engineer and say, you know, can you take care of this? It has to do with advertising sales. I don't handle those. I call up the advertising salespeople. If it has to do with talking into a mic, that's in my lane. Are you telling me that you'd like to have the states address a question that the federal government refuses to deal with?
Well, that's the question, and that's the answer. So the states point to the counties point to the federal government, and everybody points the fingers at each other.
No. Stop a second. But hold on. This is an exclusively federal issue. Why do I say that? Because the Constitution says that abundantly clearly, and since the Constitution was written, we've had court decision after court decision saying, both for good and ill, this is only an issue for the federal government. Enforcement of immigration. There was a time, if you go back into the 1800s, there was a time where states could naturalize citizens, and it was a weird, and it was stupid to say you can come into the United States through this state, and this state can tell you you're allowed to come in, but then you can go anywhere in the rest of the United States. It's a naturally federal issue. So when you say everybody's pointing a finger, no, we're not. There is one government in this country that is in charge of immigration, and only one. Does that seem clear to you?
Right, but there's only four states that border the southern border, so it needs to be a federal issue focused on four states, is my opinion.
Well, no, but okay, so here's the problem. You said stop it in those states. Are you talking about letting illegals come into those four states and then telling the states it's your problem, or are you saying stop them before they come into those states?
You're going to hate this, but I'm going to say build a wall in those four states and let Mexico pay for the wall.
I don't hate that at all. In fact, if we'd let Donald Trump finish the wall, if Congress had not fought him every step of the way, and still in all, he managed to erect a lot of wall, and it made a difference. Not big enough, and even the Biden administration has been about finishing parts of the wall that were not finished, despite Joe saying we're not going to finish the wall. But I don't even know why we're talking about the states. This is a job for the federal government and only the federal government. Now, there are a lot of other things. Clean water can be a state issue, a city issue, a county issue, and a federal issue. And because clean water does flow from state to state, it's primarily a federal issue. But you have lots of problems in America. Feeding the hungry, you know, is we've got welfare that is funded by the federal government, administered by the states, and ultimately administered by little county offices. There are lots of problems that do cross those government lines. But this one problem, this is the federal government's problem. What do we do about a president who just says, I'm not going to do a damn thing about it. In fact, I'm going to invite and encourage people to cross our border illegally. What should we do about that?
Well, it's a lot like water rights, really, where there are cross-border, cross-state border jurisdictional questions that have to come into play. So I would equate it to water rights, where we need to focus the problem where the problem is. And in this case, it focuses on four individual
states. You keep going back to those four states, even though those states have nothing to say about immigration whatsoever. And if you don't believe me, back during Obama, the state of Arizona said, well, if the federal government isn't going to enforce the law, then we will. And guess what happened? They got dragged into court by President Obama, by his DOJ, and they got sued. And Arizona was told in no uncertain terms, you have absolutely nothing to say about enforcement of immigration laws. That's why people like Governor Greg Abbott of Texas have had to say, well, I'll tell you what, if we can't enforce immigration laws, what we can do is enforce trespassing laws at the state level. But that's weak tea when it comes to solving a problem that is Joe Biden's problem. Joe Biden broke it. Joe Biden owns it. We're live at Feet to the Fire on Capitol Hill today, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Lars here with a question for you. Why is it that some people aren't as stressed out about the future as you'd think they would be? The answer? They're probably among the millions of Americans who prepared themselves with emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. If the worst ever happens, literally millions of American families are already protected from dealing with those empty store shelves. Is yours? Mine is. If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now and grab some emergency food kits, at least one for every member of your family. These kits give you a wide variety of delicious meals that average over 2,000 calories per day. That's
That's what you need. Everything stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Order your kits right now by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your order ships fast and arrives discreetly in unmarked boxes. Listen, this is something you need to jump on now before the next news headline stuns the world. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show in sight of the U.S. Capitol Dome. It's a pleasure to be with you, and this is a hugely important issue. And one of the people I've been looking forward to talking to is Dale Wilcox, who is the executive director and lawyer, general counsel, for the Immigration Reform Law Institute. And we're always pleased to have you on the program, Dale. But I got to ask you something. We're all focused on the election. We think it's going to go the way of the Republicans. We'll get majorities, thin one in the Senate, but probably better than the Democrats have right now, which is 50+1. Yeah. And over in the House, maybe a good-sized majority. But even with all that, what can we get done in the next 2 years to stop the travesty that's going on right now, driven by an American president who says there is no problem?
Yeah, well, I mean, at least Republicans can control the purse, and there's a lot to be done there. The Democrats currently have the country in a mess. But really, we're busy in the courts, not so much in the legislature, because they're at a stalemate over there currently. So we're busy throughout the nation suing Biden in the courts and actually having some great success at that.
Well, and that used to be the province of the Democrats. They wouldn't do anything on Capitol Hill. They say, we'll go to the courts and get them to write law. Now we're going to do it, but we're not going to ask the courts to write law.
Correct. Right? Enforce the law. Imagine that. This administration and, sadly, sanctuary cities throughout the country are not enforcing the law. They're not obeying the oath that they took when they assumed office. They are not, and specifically Biden, according to the U.S. Constitution, is supposed to take care to see that the laws are executed. He's not doing that. They are purposefully wrecking the border for political gain and, sadly, ideological gain.
Help people understand that, though, who don't study as closely as you do. So we're going to gain by letting millions of people come into the country illegally who are going to be a burden on this society. In some cases, they're actually going to be an antagonistic danger to society, terrorists, pedophiles, convicted criminals, and the like. How does that help them gain?
Well, make no mistake what you just said. It's not in the interest of Americans. It's in the interest of politicians. So, number one, they're looking to stay in power. This is about power. This is about potential future voters.
Okay.
You know, statistics show that new immigrants vote Democrats 70% of the time. So what are they going to do? They're importing new voters. But it's even worse than that. What's happened is you have a segment of the Democrat Party that hates America. They hate the flag, they hate patriotism, they hate everything that we've ever stood for. So what they're trying to do is overwhelm, crash the system so that they can replace it with the ideology of their choice, socialism, communism.
I understand that just this week one of the committees of Congress passed out a bill that allows the votes of foreign nationals in federal elections. Is that going to become law?
No, it's not. It better not, and we're fighting against that. In fact, we helped litigate the case in New York, where New York City had passed an ordinance allowing non-citizens to vote in their elections. Well, folks, citizenship means something, okay? Even if someone's here legally, legal permanent resident, has a green card, they should not be allowed to vote until they become a citizen, because if you've ever seen that process up close, they have to take an oath of allegiance when you become a citizen. Oath of allegiance to the United States above any other country, including your home country you came from.
Right.
Citizenship means something. Only citizens should be able to vote. And when you allow non-citizens to vote, it dilutes citizens' vote.
And does it do so to a great enough extent that a court would look at it and say this is disenfranchising legitimate citizens?
Yes, I think so. I think so, and that's what.
And that's the case.
And that's the case, and that's what we've argued in those courts. Of course, the New York City City Council didn't have the authority to do that, pursuant to the New York Constitution, anyway. So they didn't even follow their own rules in that regard. But we've argued also that equal protection. You know, in the bill that they passed, they actually said, we want to increase the voice of Haitians, Chinese, and Mexicans. So they are discriminating. They are looking at ethnic groups and saying, we want to lift their voices, which means other people's voices are less vocal. And in fact, the black community came out against this ordinance because they were like, hey, wait a minute, you're disenfranchising us. So yeah, clearly it violated equal protection.
Why do they look, they've got lawyers too, right?
Yes.
Did they deliberately put little landmines throughout their own legislation they're going to blow up in their own faces?
No, I think they push as far as they can. They try to push past the boundaries. You know, maybe no one will challenge it. Maybe we'll get away with this. That's what Biden has done. He's taking extreme measures and hoping that, number one, no one will have standing. You know, there's no such thing as general taxpayer standing. You and I can't go into court and say, hey, what about us? No, but immigrants always have standing because they'll say, oh, you're denying us a right or some benefit, and they get standing. So they're hoping no one will have standing to challenge, or no one will see it, and just it'll get passed and move on to the next thing.
I'm talking to Dale Wilcox from the Immigration Reform Law Institute. Let me ask you a legal question then. I mean, it's not a complicated one, but the whole Martha's Vineyard mess.
Yes.
And then you got a few of these illegals who voluntarily got on a plane, and apparently Florida did its due diligence and said, you understand you're going there, you're going to a very nice community.
Yeah.
They didn't say it would be a welcoming community. It turned out not to be. And I guess Martha's Vineyard now has established the standard that America can use military force to deport illegals.
Quickly,
At least from wealthy enclaves.
Yes.
Do they have the ability to go to court and say you're violating our 14th Amendment rights as people who are in your country illegally because you put us on a plane that we got on voluntarily?
Yeah, anybody can file a lawsuit. Now, whether the lawsuit has merit, that's another thing. I've read their complaint, and I think it's a joke. They're arguing that our Fourth Amendment right against search and seizure was violated under the U.S. Constitution. They've willingly got on a plane, okay? And the claims are ridiculous. Once they were midair, they were seized. Well, should they have provided them parachutes so they could jump out? No, I mean, it's ridiculous.
I mean, come on. I flew out here to D.C. When I got to the airport, no surprise, I had to walk through a metal detector and put my belongings. In fact, one guy looked one of the TSI guys said, can I look through that box? I said, sure, go ahead.
Yeah.
I voluntarily gave that up.
I've got
no case, do I?
Right, and one of their claims is emotional distress. Now, think about this. They came from Venezuela. Not even Central America. They came from South America. So they came up through Central America and how dangerous it is there. And in fact, the UN, I'm no friend of the UN, but the UN says that the U.S. southern border is the most dangerous land border crossing in the world. So you want to talk about emotional distress, you're arguing that flying to Martha's Vineyard caused you sleepless nights in vertigo, where you just came through cartel land, and statistics show one-third of women are sexually assaulted coming across the border, two-thirds of children suffer violence coming across the border. Don't tell me that you're suffering harm now because you were flown to Martha's Vineyard.
And on top of that, almost 1,000 have died in the crossing the last 19 months.
Dale
Wilcox, thank you very much, Dale. I appreciate the time. Dale Wilcox is here with us from the Immigration Reform Law Institute. We're at Feet to the Fire, put on by the Federation for American Immigration Reform. I'm glad to get to your calls. And of course, I'd take a naysayer any day. Those horror, the way they treated the horror, the humanity of those poor people being taken to Martha's Vineyard, and Barack Obama would not put them up at his 7,000 square foot house. It was horrible. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, live on Capitol Hill at Feet to the Fire. It is a pleasure to be with you. And by the way, we want to say a special thank you to our friends at Butcher Boys for sponsoring today's broadcast. Butcher Boys on 4th Plain in Vancouver. And, of course, if you're like me and you like meat, then you are already familiar with Butcher Boys. And if you're not, then you're the poorer for it. Glad to get your calls at 866-A-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Our Twitter poll today. Should American cities that declare themselves sanctuaries, think Seattle, Portland, Eugene, Salem, Tri-City, Spokane, if you've declared yourself a sanctuary city, should you take the bulk of the new so-called illegal alien refugees, who are not truly refugees or asylum seekers? There's a brand new poll out that says 63% of likely voters agree that sanctuary cities should have to share the burden. As far as I'm concerned, any city that says it's a sanctuary should get the entire burden. And all the communities that said, we don't want any part of this, we want enforcement of the law, you shouldn't have to take any of the burden. At least that's my point of view. To your calls. Let's go first to Leslie.
Hey,
hey Leslie, okay, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind? Leslie?
Hello?
Hello, Leslie. How are you?
Hi, Lars. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. It's hot back here in Washington, D.C. It's a swamp, but other than that, it's a pretty decent day. What's on your mind?
Lars, I'm a longtime listener and a first-time caller.
Thank you.
And I would like you to know how hot it was where I grew up in Yuma, Arizona, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And I would like your listeners to know what it's really like on the border. So I have a couple of points that I was hoping to share.
Please do.
I would like to say that I'm the daughter of Jerry L. Jackson, the NRA record holder of 13 unbeatable police shooting combat matches on behalf of the Border Patrol. I grew up on the border. I grew up in the Border Patrol community. And I have firsthand accounts of the people coming across the border. I would like to say that during my childhood, when my mom and I took sandwiches to my dad working on the graveyard shift, we also took sandwiches and cold sodas for the recently arrested people that were sitting in the parking lot in the Ram Chargers that they used in the 60s and 70s. We met a lot of nice people. But we also had a lot of scary encounters, such as a neighborhood boy being kidnapped when I was in 10th grade, rather than the intended target, my brother, as people on the Mexican side of the border were threatening and doing things like that, hoping that the Border Patrol agents would not do their job.
Can I ask you a question,
though?
When you talk about taking sandwiches to people who've been arrested, and then you say, but people are being kidnapped to aid and abet that, why would you want to do any kindness at all to people who are breaking our laws? And where there is a legitimate way into this country, and they've chosen not to take it. They've chosen to take the shortcut, the illegal shortcut. I know you're intending to say to people, well, I'm being compassionate to people, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm not very compassionate to criminals, especially the likes of which bring in deadly drugs and engage in kidnapping and other violent activities. I wouldn't give them a warm, murky glass of water, let alone a cold drink.
And it's such a great question, Lars, and it just takes me back to the original Border Patrol stations. As the Border Patrol has grown and the problem at the border has grown, definitely things have changed, and definitely today I would not be saying, may I come on to the premises and bring food and drink.
Well, but you were then, and you said that they kidnapped people to achieve an illegal crossing of the border. So they were doing nasty things back when you were a kid, weren't they?
Yes. As I was growing up, I was learning more and witnessing more to the point where I understood why I was not allowed to go across the border with high school friends when it came time for me to be in high school. Okay. In high school, I was followed for 2 years by undercover agents because, again, my family was threatened because of the work my dad was doing. I always wondered how my parents knew where I was on Friday night and why I was always getting in trouble. And as I grew up, like I said, I learned more and more about what's really going on. And people who live on the border, they know this isn't a state problem. It's not a Democrat problem. It's not a Republican problem.
Well, hold on, Leslie. There are a lot of times people say things on the show, and I realize they're saying them out of the best of motives. You say it's not a Democrat problem, it's not a Republican problem. Tell me how this is not, and Leslie, I got to challenge you. How is this not a Democrat problem? We have a Democrat Congress, we have a Democrat president. They have created this problem. When Joe Biden did what he did, started to do 19 months ago, his friends in the Congress, even if they're fellow Democrats, could say, Mr. President, you've gone too far, and you can't do this. They're not saying that. Republicans are saying, you can't do this. Democrats are not the president, not Democrats in Congress. Tell me, I know why you said what you said, but I don't think it's true. this is a Democrat problem. And I know it's popular to say, well, we're all guilty and we're all sinners. Yes, in the eyes of the Lord, we're all sinners. But in this case, tell me which
Thank
Democrats
you for the
are
challenge,
fighting.
Large.
No, but tell me I which Democrats are fighting back against this.
I will tell you. So I'm not going to disagree with what you just said. I'm going to share my perspective the way I was going to. It's all of our problem because I'm currently working in the Pacific Northwest in addictions, and I wish everyone knew what I knew about what's coming across the border, especially the fentanyl and where it's going. So let me also add to that, Lars. Between 2003 and 2007, I got a degree in cultural anthropology at the University of California.
Leslie, I have to warn you. Leslie, I have to warn you.
Across the southern border, I appreciate all the background. Everywhere.
Leslie, I appreciate all the background. We're burning a lot of time. So let me put it to you this way. Today, the Multnomah County Sheriff, who's apparently a liberal Democrat, Mike Reese, says he's a sanctuary sheriff. And he knows, he just sees 92,000 fentanyl pills. He knows where they came from. He knows who brought them across the border. He knows it was the Mexican drug cartels, the same people doing the trafficking, and he won't do anything about it. So when we have that problem and people say, well, but it's a problem for all of us. No, one side of the aisle says, let's fight this problem. The other side says, not a problem at all. Fentanyl's okay. Illegals are okay. Trafficking's okay. How do we fight this when the very people who are the predominant leadership in the Northwest say, we don't see the problem? And you've got 1 minute, and then we're going to hit a hard break.
Thank you so much, Lars. It was great talking to you today, and I'm hoping all of the people listening to you, calling in, et cetera, really, really get down to some basics about how can we fix this.
You don't have a suggestion,
and
Les?
Thanks for taking...
I do have a suggestion. Okay, let's hear it.
No, I do have a suggestion. We absolutely need to know who's coming into our country. We need to vet people. We need to know who our next-door neighbors are. We really need to fix things. And thank you so much for taking the call, Lars. Best of luck to you today, and thanks for your show.
Thank you very much. That's Leslie. It is Capitol Hill today for our Feet to the Fire broadcast. It's my pleasure to be with you. I'll get back to more of your phone calls and emails in just a moment. 866-HEY-LARS. Emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Vote in our Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show. And you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We're live on Capitol Hill today. Beautiful day in D.C. Now all the storm clouds have cleared away. The rain is over. The flags are flying. The Capitol Dome is there. And the control of that dome, I believe, will change in November. Let's go to Wyatt in Enumclaw. Hey, Wyatt, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on our Feet to the Fire broadcast in Washington, D.C. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Lars. I'm here. I'm calling in because I wanted to ask your opinion on if you thought that there could be a discrimination lawsuit against the government or another governmental agency for people that immigrate legally. Because I'm in the situation of my girlfriend lives in Berlin currently, and we've been together for about 5 years now, and she's actually my fiance. And
congrats.
Now we get to try and go through the legal immigration process.
And here's what you'd have to do. And now remember, I always tell people I'm not a lawyer because I'm not giving legal advice. But as one of my guests said earlier, anybody can bring a lawsuit for anything in America. That doesn't mean it's going to go anywhere. But one of the first criteria for suing somebody is so simple you don't have to go to law school to understand it. You have to have been harmed. And I classically use my next-door neighbor because I know he'd never do this because Chiwu's a good guy. Chiwu Chang, good next-door neighbor. If he drove his car through the fence in my yard and damage my fence, and it is my fence because I put it up, but he and I agree on where it would run. We're good neighbors. I could say, Chiwa, you damaged my fence. I want you to pay for it. And he'd probably just say, get a couple of bids, and I'll take care of it. But if he wasn't inclined to pay for the damage he did, I could sue him, and I would have to say to the court, this is a simple version of a lawsuit, Your Honor, my next-door neighbor drove through my fence, damaged it. I asked him to pay for it. He refused. I want you to make him pay for the damage I have suffered. What you'd have to prove is that by allowing 5 million illegal aliens into America, that has damaged you by slowing down the process to bring your fiancé in. It would be a tough one. it'd be a tough one to make. But I've pointed out to other people.
I think it would be.
You think you could prove it? You think you could prove it?
Well, I was thinking because all the requirements that I have to abide by, like being above the poverty level, showing like 3 years of tax returns, and then also signing on or having a signee of like my parents saying that they will be financially responsible for my fiance if they decide to leave me for some reason for the next 10 years. Not to mention that until she's been here for a long enough time, she's not eligible for anything like unemployment or things like that. But as far as I know, the people that come here illegally are in some cases.
Right. Well, yeah. And I mean, and in fact, we're shoveling out lots and lots of help for the people who've done it illegally and not as much help for you. I mean, if you want to, talk to a lawyer. He might be willing to sit down and talk with you about the idea. But if you said, well, I'm not getting equal protection because I'm being held to a higher standard, my fiance and I are being held to a higher standard than these illegals are being held, we want to be held to the same standard as them. It'd be a novel idea. And if a lawyer tells you, yep, you might be able to get a judge to say, because Joe Biden is not holding those 5 million to that standard, he shouldn't hold your girlfriend to that standard either. And maybe you could get somewhere with it. I'm skeptical, but that would be the best, because I just understand the nuts and bolts that you got to show that you were damaged, and then you have to show how can the court remedy the damage. They could remedy it for you by saying, I'll tell you what, we're going to order that INS, Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, or not ICE, but naturalization, they have to hold you to no higher standard than Joe Biden is holding these 5 million illegals. And I think the Biden administration would say, well, we are telling them they have to show up in court. The practical answer is, yes, you're telling them they have to show up in court, and when they don't, nothing happens. On the other hand, if you brought your girlfriend in, said, have her come in and visit, and I don't know, during that process, is she even allowed to come in and visit?
It's you have to petition for it, and then that's the other thing. So, like, even if you get the visa, while she has to go back, either if we do the K-1 visa, which is where we apply ahead of time, and then she gets approved, and we have to go through all these interviews to prove that it's a real marriage and that we're going to stay together and whatnot. And if that's approved, then she has to come here, and within 90 days, we have to get married. If we don't get married within those 90 days, she has to go back, and then we'd have to reapply. So that's another thing that we're being harmed by, is because we don't get to plan out our wedding like a normal couple does. We have to plan within their time. We don't know when that's going to show up, and we can't plan for that. So even if she comes in and then we get married, then she gets to stay. But she doesn't get to work for 6 months. Yep. She has to apply for adjustment of status and wait to be able to work. And that can take up to like 6 months most of the time.
So you're very much you're on very personal things. You're very much under the thumb of the government, because if they suddenly say, "Okay, we're giving you the visa," now marriage has to happen in 90 days. Well, maybe you had planned to get married in June, but if they give you the visa in, let's say November, they say, "Okay, end of February, better make it a Valentine's wedding." Well, no, we had planned on a June wedding. Doesn't matter. The government is now literally. You know, in a country where all the Democrats and liberals run around saying everybody can have love and everybody can have marriage and we have to pass gay marriage as a matter of statute because they're worried that Clarence Thomas will single-handedly take it away from them, they're then turning around to you and saying, you have to get married by the end of February, and if you don't, we're sending your girlfriend back to her home country. That, can you imagine how intrusive that is to have the federal government literally ordering you the marriage must happen by date certain? It is insane. And on the other hand, but if two gay guys or two gay women going to get married, well, they should be able to do whatever they want. The government has no business telling them what they can or can't do. But you, because you asked to bring somebody in who jumped through all the hoops, I haven't even asked you how much you paid, but I imagine it's probably in the thousands at least, that you're trying to get your fiance.
Like $3,000, and that's not counting any legal help that we may or may not need, just to start. And then not to mention the time that it takes. The waiting times were between a year and 2 years. So just if I start it today, we might not know for a year or 2 years from now. And we've already been together for 5 years, and we had to deal with the COVID fiasco, which was really fun to try and go around because we couldn't see each other. And we didn't know when we would get to see each other the next time. And
those thankfully, are all, you know what? Made it. I got to tell you, God's got to be watching out for you because those are the kinds of things, you and I both know this, that could bust up a relationship. And, you know, where you're saying, well, we're going to have to wait longer, and it might not happen at all, or it might happen only. All those things put stresses and strains on human beings. And you can say, oh, no, we're like machines. We just do what the government tells us to do. Now, I wish you well, and I hate to suggest a radical guerrilla attack. Fly her to Mexico City, pay a cartel to get her across safely, and just walk in and get one of those little tickets from the Border Patrol. They're the get-out-of-jail-free one, the one that'll get you on an airplane without picture ID because somebody wrote whatever name you made up on the piece of paper and handed it to the Border Patrol. You know, this morning I talked to a guy who was collecting driver's licenses out along the border because they tossed their driver's licenses because they say, oh, this is my Cuban driver's license or my Venezuelan driver's license because I'm going to tell them I came from Guatemala and that I was being persecuted because I'm gay. I mean, whatever story you want to feed them, but if you were to do that, I actually think, you know, it's too much experimentation to do to real human beings like you and your fiance. But if you said, fly to Mexico City, I'll come with you. We'll get across the border. We're going to get one of those little tickets, and then we'll say we want to be held to the same non-standard that everybody else who just spirits themselves across the border is held to. And otherwise, then you're telling me you're going to treat us differently because I'm an American citizen. My fiance is not trying to sneak in. I don't know a better suggestion for you, but talk to a lawyer, maybe equal protection, but as I always say, I'm not a lawyer. We're live at Feet to the Fire on Capitol Hill. Glad to take your calls, and we'll get back to those in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails. Jessica Vaughn is sitting in front of me, Director of Policy Studies at the Center for Immigration Studies, live here at FAIR's Feet to the Fire event. You were just telling me during the break, you were a consular officer. Now, would you mind describing to people what that job consists of?
I adjudicated visa applications. I interviewed people quickly to see if they qualified for a visa. And sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. But I was on the front lines of our immigration policy, people trying to get into the country. Some for legitimate reasons, often not, sat and got lied to all day long. You learn a lot about human nature.
Lied to and give me an example of a typical lie that a consular officer would get told about obtaining a visa.
I'm going to visit my sister. I'm going to be there 2 weeks to help her take care of her newborn. And then see these people come back. You know, the ones that I hadn't had before, and they come and present their passport, and I see they stayed 5 months and 3 weeks, and they're asking for a new visa. And I say, well, what were you doing on that last trip? Oh, well, you know, I went to visit my sister to help her with the baby, and then they gave me 6 months, so I thought I'd stay. And I'm going to Disney World.
Is there any consequence for people who do that, though? Because
well, I wouldn't issue them a new visa.
shouldn't that? I went to it was between when it was the Soviet Union and when it became what it is now. It was the CIS at the time for a while, for
yes,
a couple of years.
Commonwealth of Independent States.
That's what it was. And we were in Khabarovsk in the Soviet Far East, and they warned us. They said, you have a visa. The visa is good for these, Khabarovsk and Irkutsk. And that's all it's good for. You can't go anywhere but there. And if you get caught going anywhere but there, you're under arrest. Your visa is good to this date. If your airline gets delayed, you better get that extended. And well, how do you do that? Well, it's complicated. And if you don't leave by the time your visa is up, you're going to jail. I mean, it was pretty cut and dried.
But that's how it works. They don't have much illegal immigration, I bet, because people believe that the law is probably going to be enforced and that there will be consequences for it. Unfortunately, with our immigration system, now people believe that if they come and cross the border illegally or overstay a visa, they believe quite rightly that nothing is going to happen to them. They will be able to get a job under the table. In some states, they'll be able to get a driver's license. And in some places, they'll be able to access public assistance. And if they have a child here, that child is going to be a U.S. citizen who is guaranteed to stay here for life. So this is, you know, the incentives for them to come and stay here illegally. That's why our immigration system is broken, because nobody believes the rules are going to be enforced.
Well, in fact, let me go sideways a little bit. 14th Amendment. Is it being properly read when it says, if you're here in America under the jurisdiction of the United States? So if I'm on a visa, I am. But if I've overstayed the visa, is my child still an American citizen? Am I still under the jurisdiction of the United States? And an illegal who comes in is not under the jurisdiction of the United States. If they have a child, is that child an American citizen?
I don't believe that kids of illegal aliens should be able to automatically get citizenship. I think what we need to have is test that case in our court system. Be willing to get this beyond a barstool debate like
right.
you're having.
Right.
You know, we can talk, legal scholars talk about it all the time, but we need to actually put forward a case and see how it makes it through the court system and get it. Because the way the 14th Amendment is interpreted now is based on the case of a green card holder's kids.
Yep.
Which is a whole, in my mind, a whole different scenario.
Very different.
Someone who is legally admitted, even someone who comes on like a student visa, whole different scenario. They're here legally. They have a child. That's different. We have never asked the courts to decide about whether the child of an illegal alien actually should be entitled to U.S. citizenship when they can get the citizenship of their parents
well,
in their home country.
Especially because Congress won't do its job. Congress could just say, we'll write a statute that actually spells out under all possible circumstances how that child is to be treated. And they even did that with regard to Native Americans back in the
yes.
day. And they did it with regard to the kids of embassy
of diplomats,
ambassadors.
Yes.
So you'd say, well, you're the Russian ambassador. Your child's an American. No, we wrote you out of it for a very good reason, because it could create some real complications.
Right.
If you said, if China's ambassador has a child on American soil because of medical urgency or something else, and you say, that child's an American now. Can you imagine that diplomatic hoo-ha?
Yeah. But as it is, we're not even enforcing that understanding about the kids of diplomats. A diplomat from wherever has a child here, that kid's given a social security number in the hospital, and they're going to get a passport, despite what the 14th Amendment. It's pretty clear that people agree kids of diplomats should not be U.S. citizens, but they are getting citizenship.
Where can my audience go and access some of the because they want to know the facts and figures on this. Where can they find it on your site?
Everything we do is on our website at cis.org. Reports, podcasts, videos, it's all there.
Well, and it's one of the biggest issues America is confronting right now. Anything else you want to tell them?
Thank you for listening. You've been doing a great job of getting this issue before the public for many years now. So
yeah, well, unfortunately, some people say, all you do is talk about it. What about the I got solutions out the wazoo, but unfortunately,
it affects every issue that
it does. Crime, drugs, death,
education.
Life, education, the whole nine yards. Ms. Vaughn, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank
We're
you.
Live at Feet to the Fire on Capitol Hill with the Federation for American Immigration Reform, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Oregon Utility Notification Center wants to remind you that whether you're planting a tree, building a fence, or just making improvements around your farm or home, click or call before you start your work to get the area marked. Then dig safely and avoid contact with buried utilities. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones. Know what's below. Call before you dig. For more information, visit us online at digsafelyoregon.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to take your phone calls and emails. We're live on Capitol Hill. It's a beautiful Thursday, and we're here for Feet to the Fire, put on by FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. And we're glad to take your calls, and I'll do that in a moment. But sitting right in front of me is Tom Homan, and you've heard Tom on the show before, former acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. You see him on Fox News a lot, and a senior fellow at the Immigration Reform Law Institute. Tom, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Lars.
Now, this is a thorny problem. You've been talking to dozens of these talk shows about this problem.
By the time I'm done here in an hour, I've done 51 interviews.
51 interviews. Is anybody listening out there in America?
You know, I think it's a great event. We're speaking to millions of people.
Yeah.
And put this on top of what DeSantis and Abbott has done to raise the stakes. and put it on, you know, make a national conversation. This is the direct best timing with the midterms coming up. Shows like yours are important. Fox has an audience, but radio, conservative radio, has a lot bigger audience.
Now, collectively, we do. Yeah. Absolutely. So what do we do about this problem? Because part of what discourages me is I want the control of that building over there, the Capitol building, to change in November. But I'm told that even when it does, we don't have a president who will sign any kind of bill that will actually take care of the border, and we don't have a president who runs the executive department who took an oath to faithfully execute the laws of the United States who's willing to actually faithfully execute the laws. So what do you do?
The only thing you can do is if they win the House, they control the purse strings. And they need to, you know, this immigration issue has become such, it's not an immigration issue alone. It's turned into a national security issue. It's turned into a public safety, public health issue because of fentanyl killing so many Americans. We're at the point where Republicans got to be bold. They got threatened to shut down the government and not fund the government unless this administration shows them one thing to slow the flow. To this date, they haven't done a single thing to slow the flow. Everything Secretary Mayorkas has done is send more resources to the border to process and release quickly so it doesn't appear to be a surge, so there's no overcrowding. If there's no overcrowding, nothing to see here. And by doing that, they put the country at risk because I had a Border Patrol agent call me last month and said that they're in such a hurry to process and release, they're not waiting for vetting to come back. And they released a guy. 2 days later, he came back hot on the terrorist watch list. This administration has created a national security issue of huge proportions. So I think it's time for Republicans to grow a spine and say, we'll shut it down unless you do something.
See, Tom, that's my big concern because it certainly is worth mentioning. The last time we had a Republican president, Donald Trump, and control of both houses, we didn't act on this, and we could have. Now, yes. I put a lot of that on Paul Ryan and other members of leadership. I don't like former Congressman Ryan. He's probably making a great living on K Street or whatever it is he's doing these days. But fact is, we threw away the opportunity, and I don't even know why.
I was so upset that we had the House, the Senate, and the White House, and the never-Trumpers didn't step up, and we could have fixed this once for all. They didn't pass one meaningful piece of legislation. They fixed three loopholes, and they can do that in a single day. 85% of this problem is gone. And the president couldn't come in and make policy changes, and we, you know, this pendulum couldn't swing so far right and left. Three simple loopholes. I've been up the Hill hundreds of times as the ICE director, begging them. Three simple loopholes. You can do this quickly. They just won't do it.
What are the three? Is a simple way of explaining to people who are non-border agents
there's
and non-lawyers.
There's three reasons we're having all this surge right now. You know, first of all, the asylum. When you come to the country border and claim asylum, you do an initial interview, and the threshold is so low on purpose by statute because they want to make sure they don't send someone back be persecuted by the homeland. The cartels teach them what to say. It's a few key phrases. So they'll pass their first interview as long as they say the right thing. Then when they get in front of a judge, that threshold is much higher. So we've asked them, raise that initial threshold closer to the judicial level because what happens is they pass first level, they get in, they don't show up in court.
Yep.
Or if they show up in court, they don't qualify and they never leave. They just become a fugitive and wait around for the next amnesty. That's one loophole. Second loophole is the Florida Settlement Agreement. Let us detain families long enough in their family residential center, not a jail, until they see a judge. We did that in the beginning of the Obama administration. We held them about 40 days. 90% lost their case. 99 out of 10 lost their case. We put them on an airplane and sent them home. Numbers tanked.
But sure, then, because the word got back. Yeah. Don't bother to come. They're going to send you back.
Then the Ninth Circuit came out and says, you can't hold them for 40 days. You're going to hold them for 20 days. And in my affidavit in that lawsuit with Judge Dolly G in the Ninth Circuit, I said, if you do this, you're going to see a family surge like you've never seen before. Mr. Holman, you're a fearmonger. You have no evidence of that. Well, who was right?
You were.
So change the Florida Settlement Agreement. Let us detain families long enough to see a judge in a family residential center, not a jail. The final one is the TVPRA, the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. If you're a child from Mexico and you enter the country by yourself and it's ascertained that you're not a victim of trafficking, you're immediately removed to Mexico to the government officials or your family, whoever you can contact. If you're from Central America or any other country, you get a whole process that takes years. So we're saying, understand why you did this, but if it's ascertained they're not victims of trafficking, treat the children from Central America and other countries the same way you treat children from Mexico.
Yep.
Three quick fixes. 85% of the problem's gone.
And what you avoid, tell me if I'm wrong, when the word gets back and they say don't bother to come because they've changed the rules, then that family doesn't try to make that trip and put their kids at risk.
Excellent. Yes. Exactly right. And let me give you an example of what you just said. So the Remain in Mexico program, they were being kept in Mexico. About 95% were losing their cases. The word got out. So rather than waiting in Mexico, they went home. They said, wait a minute, they're on to us. If I'm going to wait in Mexico just to be told no, because 95% of being told no, I'm just going to go home. And that happened. And that's another reason they got rid of it.
It's deterrence at its most basic.
And that's another reason why this administration got rid of it, because they knew that, look, this administration knows. They got the same data I just spilled to you. Immigration court data says 9 out of 10 don't qualify. The Homeland Security Lifecycle Report says if you get order removed and you're not in detention, if you're not being detained, if you're an alien child that gets order removed, you leave 3% of the time. If you're a family unit, you leave 6% of the time. If you're a single adult, you leave 18% of the time. This secretary knows that. He knows that 9 out of 10 will not pass and they'll get order removed. And he knows if they're detained, they're going to be removed. But if they're not detained, they're never leaving, and that's why they're not detaining them.
And the border counselors have the smarts to say, this one is probably going to, you know, get past the courts, that one's not. And
Absolutely.
They can sort it out at the lower level and leave the courts for the cases that actually deserve it.
Bingo, yes. That's how simple this is. But we can't get the people up there in the puzzle palace to pass meaningful legislation and make it happen. And if they really care about the migrants like they said they did, right, President Trump, inhumane, mean policies. When Doctors Without Borders did a study, said 31% of women that make that journey get sexually assaulted. So when President Trump and our team had illegal immigration down 83% at a 40-year low, how many women weren't getting sexually assaulted?
Yep.
How many children weren't drowning in the river? How many Americans weren't dying of fentanyl overdoses? How many millions of dollars were the cartels not making? How many known and suspected terrorists weren't sneaking across that border? President Trump's policy saved lives. Under Joe Biden, record number of migrants have died, 1,300 since he's been president, a record number of Americans have died.
Tom, thank you very much. That's Tom Homan, the former acting director of ICE. We're live at Feet to the Fire on Capitol Hill, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, live from Capitol Hill with the Feet to the Fire event put on by FAIR. And I want to go to your calls for a moment here. We've had such great information, but let me go and see what's going on the Radio Northwest Network. Jerry is listening in Eugene on the Radio Northwest Network and KPNW. Hey, Jerry, what's on your mind?
Well, we're having a special event in Springfield. Dr. Patrick Moore, co-founder of Greenpeace, is going to be at Springfield High School, 6:30, 8:30 in a town hall format. It should be really electrifying, informational, entertaining. So you can take questions from the audience and students, college students, high school students. So it's tonight, 6:30 at Springfield High School.
And by the way, just so people understand, when you mention the former head of Greenpeace, you need to mention that he's changed his point of view substantially from when he was with that organization, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's now considered a climate denier, but he calls himself a sensible environmentalist. He is right here if you want to talk to him for a minute.
Sure, I'd be glad to talk to him.
Sure.
Here you go. Put him on the phone. Put him on the horn, please.
Hi, Lars. Patrick Moore here.
Hey, it's Dr. Moore, isn't it?
Yes, it could be.
Well, okay. Tell me, give my audience a taste of what you're going to talk about in this town hall event in Springfield and what people should know, because I'm telling you, not just at the national level, but in the Pacific Northwest, decisions are going to be made that I think are going to very much put people at great risk of their jobs, risk of their wallets, risk of their ability to heat and cool their homes, all because of decisions being made on what I think are false grounds. What's your point of view on that?
Lars, you are absolutely right about that. This is almost like some kind of suicide pact to destroy civilization. They're going to try to get rid of 82% of our energy, and they don't have anything decent to replace it with if they think they're going to build it on a wind and solar system, which works about one-third of the time. Right now, what wind and solar we have are backed up by reliable energy like natural gas and nuclear, hydroelectric, and coal. These people want to tear down all the dams. They want to shut down all the nuclear plants. They want to end the use of fossil fuels, this stupid net zero idea. If we make all the cars electric, and I'm not against electric cars, but if we make a rule that doesn't give people a choice, instead of letting people have a choice about whether they want a gas or electric car, we will have to double the amount of electricity we produce, and they think they're going to do that with wind and solar and batteries. It would take 500 years to build the number of batteries that are needed to replace the energy requirements of the United States, and that's just this one country. So this is absolutely asinine, and there are people who are buying into it. It's a purely political, nothing to do with science or technology, because this is financially and technologically impossible. Look at what's happening in Germany now. They're shutting down steel plants. Yep. They're shutting down fertilizer factories. This is going to shut down half the world. And it's going to starve part of the world.
Doc, isn't it going to starve part of the world? Because they're already this year, Spain told people you may not cool your home or office or commercial building below 80 degrees. And people say, well, that's an inconvenience. So you're going to end up sweating at work and sweating when you go out to the restaurant or the theater. Germany is telling people landlords will set the thermostat at this winter no higher than 66 Fahrenheit. And I don't know what they call it in Celsius, but 66 Fahrenheit. You say, well, what are you supposed to do? And I guess we're back to the Jimmy Carter advice, put on a sweater. But literally a technological world like ours is telling its citizens in modern countries, we don't have the energy to heat your home, to cool your home, and the energy component that goes into fertilizer to grow the food you expect to eat. Is any of that untrue?
We do have the energy. They want to ban it. And if only these so-called Greens would embrace nuclear energy. There are 96 nuclear plants running in the United States every day, 24/7, reliably, cost-effectively. Not one person in the United States has ever been injured, never mind killed, by a nuclear plant in 60 years. They are so much safer than virtually every other technology, and yet people are afraid of them because of radiation, which unfortunately is invisible. The same thing applies to carbon dioxide. The reason they are able to make up scare stories about carbon dioxide and radiation and things that are remote like polar bears and coral reefs, which they can't see, so they might as well be invisible, is because you can make up a story about something that is invisible and nobody can see it for themselves. Nobody can check whether you're telling the truth or not. This is what I call a unified theory of scare stories. All the doom and gloom stories are based on things that are invisible or so far away no one can see for themselves. So they depend on the media, on the politicians, on the activists to tell them what's really going on, and they're all lying because
Dr.
it makes them a lot of money.
Dr. Moore, and he's right about that. Ask James Hansen if you don't believe it makes a lot of money. Dr. Moore is going to be doing a presentation in Springfield. A lot of people have emailed me about this. I know we can find some info online, but one of the concerns I've got, can I throw one more concern in? Because everything you've just said, I talk about on the show, and I think you're absolutely right about it, Doc. We're a country with abundant energy. We have a couple of hundred years of natural gas and coal and oil and everything else we need, and you're right. It's not that we don't have it. It's that we will be forbidden to use the energy that we have. But let me throw one more concern in on top, which goes outside of energy per se. The last 2 years taught us that there are governments that will tell you, you will do this or else we will punish you. You will wear a mask. You will take a jab. You will shut down your business. You know, that's a lot of control. If we go from internal combustion engines, ICE engines, to electric cars and smart thermostats, not only is the government going to, through the utilities, control your thermostat and how hot or cold your home is, they will control your ability to move around because they could easily say, well, you know, it's not reasonable, Lars. You don't need to drive more than 100 miles a week given your circumstances. So you're limited to 100 miles a week, and you just won't be allowed to drive more than that. Now, if I say, well, hold on a second. I can drive anywhere I want to get my car and drive. Well, you can with a gasoline-powered car. You cannot do that with an electric car because that electric car is very easily controlled by the government. Am I right?
Yes, you are right, and so many things are being taken over that should be individual freedoms. I'm glad I've lived. I'm 75, and I'm glad I've lived in the era I have, even though there's been troubles with it. But this is really scary. The idea that we are going to be forbidden from using the energy that runs our entire lives. Now, this thing in Oregon of ending the use of natural gas in buildings.
Yep.
Like, a gas range and a gas furnace are really efficient. Gas furnaces are 90% efficient. Now, if you take that out of the house and make people put baseboard heaters in or heat pumps in, most of the time, that's going to be, the electricity is going to be provided by natural gas plants.
Yep.
Backing up the phony wind and solar.
And Doc, that's assuming they let you build the nat gas plants. And as I understand it, the Greens are all about saying to the government, you will not build backup power. That's Dr. Moore, who's going to give all that presentation in Springfield tonight. We're live in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill for Feet to the Fire, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, live on Capitol Hill within sight of the big Capitol Dome. We're at Feet to the Fire, put on by the Federation for American Immigration Reform, and it's great to be with you. I'll get to your calls here in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. You can vote in our Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show, and of course, you can send me emails, talk@LarsLarson.com. The spokesman for FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform, is Ira Melman, who's sitting in front of me now. Usually I talk to you on the phone. It's nice to see your face.
It is. It's good to be here. Good to have you here.
So where are we going to go with this issue as we head up to the midterm elections? Congress is likely to shift control, we hope, in both the House and the Senate. And can we actually get something meaningful done?
Well, look, I mean, they're probably not going to get 60 votes in the Senate, even after the election. But, you know, with control of the House of Representatives, they will have subpoena power. They can start bringing administration officials before Congress, having them testify under oath and asking them the really difficult questions. So they can also, another thing they can do is gain control of the purse strings. Right now, this administration is taking money that has been dedicated for immigration enforcement and using it for precisely the opposite. They are using it to process people and send them into the country where they're going to disappear, never be seen again. So those are some of the things. But look, I mean, we are faced with a lawless administration here. They are refusing to enforce the laws of the United States. Our constitutional founders never envisioned a president who was simply going to refuse to enforce laws. And we have to have some kind of mechanism to hold this administration accountable.
Yeah, it's funny because people call the show and they'll say, well, didn't he take an oath to faithfully execute the laws of the United States? Yeah, he did. Is there an enforcement mechanism? No, there isn't.
No, there's only impeachment, and that's not going to happen.
Are you sure? Now, let me ask you, when it shifts and the House is in charge, you may not get 60, you wouldn't get 60 in the Senate in all likelihood. But if the House were to say, President Biden has put this country at risk, he has invited millions of people to brazenly violate our laws, and he spent your money doing it, does he deserve to be impeached for that? And if so, can you get a majority of votes in the House?
I suppose it's possible. I mean, but do we really want to spend all our time impeaching the president of the opposite party each time there's an election?
When there's a just cause, I would say yes.
I mean, I'd imagine the chances of getting the conviction in the Senate would be minimal. It would just be an exercise in, you know.
But the trial could be very educational.
It could. Look, I mean, I don't know whether that's within the realm of possibility. You know, there's an election coming up in 2024. The Republicans really need to concentrate on ensuring that this administration does what it is supposed to do. They probably could impeach Alejandro Mayorkas.
Yes.
That would be a good place to start.
For lying to Congress?
There are all kinds of things. I mean, this guy just wrote memos saying we're not going to enforce 90% of our laws. That is nullification. That is not a constitutional democracy anymore. That is dictatorship in four-year increments. If presidents can come into office and say, I don't like this set of laws, I'm not going to enforce them, then how are we any different from any dictatorship around the world?
We're not. And by the way, the fact that one flight to Martha's Vineyard drew all that attention, but 78 documented flights from the border to Florida to drop, you know, dozens, hundreds of illegal aliens in that state, paid for by taxpayers, doesn't draw any attention at all.
No, but what DeSantis did was brilliant.
I mean,
and Governor Abbott. I mean, 5 days after Kamala Harris said our border is secure, they show up at her doorstep. I mean, literally at her doorstep. That's brilliant. Martha's Vineyard. This is what they can do. I mean, obviously the governors don't have the power to enforce laws. That's the federal government's responsibility. They refuse to do it. What they can do is expose them to the American public, expose the hypocrisy of these sanctuary jurisdictions. People in Martha's Vineyard claiming they don't have the resources. Millionaires live in Martha's Vineyard. There's nobody who is not a millionaire living there.
Ira, this tent. We're under a tent on top of this roof. This tent's got to be 100 by 100. It's got to be 10,000 square feet, right? There was a tent at least as big as this for Barack Obama's birthday on Martha's Vineyard. Do you think we could house 50 people within the confines of this tent that we're under right now?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, suddenly Martha's Vineyard doesn't have the resources. Eric Adams in New York, the city of 8 million people, doesn't have the resources to take care of as many people as come across that border one day in Del Rio, Texas.
Well, and not only that, but some of those secret flights in the middle of the night arriving
Westchester County.
Westchester County. So they drop them in upstate, you know, or a little
not
bit
even,
upstate.
Not even upstate. Not even upstate. One county over.
I don't live in New York, so I don't know where the line for
is. Where the Bronx ends, yes. Westchester County begins.
That begins. And so, but so it's a little bit north of... But all those people went somewhere. Did they all camp out in West in Yonkers or something? Or did they end up back in probably New York City?
Probably a lot of them are in New York City. And you didn't hear anything from Eric Adams or Bill de Blasio. It was only when Greg Abbott started doing it that they suddenly decided it was a problem. But anyway, it just exposes their hypocrisy. We're a sanctuary city. We welcome everyone. And it's all great in theory.
Including Muriel Bowser right here in D.C.
Yeah, it's all great in theory until the migrants actually start showing up. Then it's a problem.
Yeah, but if they show up surreptitiously, and where do they end up? Without resources, without jobs, without a right to work. I'm sure they may find some day labor somewhere, but the fact is they're still in these big cities.
Right, in the public schools, using public health, you know, probably even getting access to public housing in places like that. Yeah, I mean, this has become a political football, and this is how the game is now played, unfortunately.
Well, and when you have not a small number of people, I remember when the Supreme Court, I think it was in the 70s, said the kids have a right to go to school. At that point, the number of kids that would be dropped as illegal alien kids brought in by their adult parents was probably a rounding error in most of the big city school systems like L.A. Today, it's not a rounding error if a say 10% of the 5 million that have come in the last 18 months are kids, are school-age kids. 500,000 kids dropped into the school systems of America that are already overcrowded and overburdened. I wish parents would come unglued about this and say, you're not going to cheat my kid of an education, to provide an education for somebody that Joe Biden let come in.
Well, first of all, a lot of the people with means are moving out of those school districts. Another thing is that decision, Plyler v. Doe,
yes,
needs to be revisited. It was a 5-4 decision in 1982 based on a case in Tyler, Texas. And the Supreme Court in that narrow decision said the number of kids who are in the Tyler, Texas school systems who are here illegally are so small that it is outweighed by the cost of not giving these kids education. Well, I think you can make a very, very credible argument that in most major cities today, it is a very substantial burden to the communities, and that needs to be taken into account.
And bigger still, because almost all of those kids are going to be English language learners. And as I understand, it's roughly 20% more expensive. So if LA public schools are spending $20,000 per kid per year, and the illegal alien kid costs $24,000, so every time you have 5 illegal alien kids, you've just chewed up space for one legitimate resident of the United States. That's not a rounding error anymore.
No, and in New York City, it's now $30,000 for a lousy education that you get there. So you add the 20%.
We'd be better off to tell the Catholic Archdiocese to do it because, as I understand it, I'm not Catholic, but I understand they run a great school system in the same neighborhoods,
yes,
that the public schools fail in.
Yeah, so, you know, New York City, you have the 10%, that's $36,000 a year per student that they're going to have to eat.
Unbelievable. Ira, thank you for what you do for FAIR, and thanks for the invitation to Feet to the
Anytime.
Fire.
Anytime. Look forward to seeing you next year.
Ira Melman from Federation for American Immigration Reform. That's the organization that wants reform of America's immigration system. That's the organization that puts on Feet to the Fire. We've been broadcasting live yesterday and today from Capitol Hill because we want to get a point across. And I said, if we could ever get some Democrats to come up here, Democrat office holders, members of Congress, Senator House, I don't care, I'd give them an hour of the show to tell me all the benefits to American citizens of allowing what is going on right now because we have a lawless president and a lawless government. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Back in a moment with your calls on the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, live on Capitol Hill for Feet to the Fire. Our Twitter poll today, should American cities that declare themselves sanctuaries take the bulk of the new illegal alien refugees? I'd say yes to that. You can answer any way you like. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. And this broadcast today, our special broadcast from Capitol Hill, is brought to you by our friends at Butcher Boys, sponsoring our special broadcast from Feet to the Fire in our nation's capital. Let me go to your calls now. Let me start with, let's go to, is it Wednesday? Is that your name? Hello?
Hello?
Is it Wednesday? Is that your name?
Oh, yeah, yes.
What's on your mind?
Hi. What's on my mind is that, first of all, I want to say this is my personal opinion, and I still think as President Trump, as my president, he is doing more for our country still and acting as a president, in my opinion, than Joe Biden has. My question is, there's so much fear in our country right now, you know, with education, transportation, you know, all that. I was hoping ever since President Trump went out of office that he'd come back and be Speaker of the House. That's what I've always hoped, and that
I don't think you would get the Never Trumpers, even if you had a Republican majority. The Never Trumpers would say, "We're not making him Speaker of the House." What Wednesday's asking about is actually possible. You do not have to be a member of the House of Representatives to be Speaker of the House. But would they ever put Donald Trump in charge of the House? I don't think it's likely, and I think he's far more useful and less constrained. If he was Speaker of the House, he would have to work with coalitions of people that he disagrees with, and I don't think that would work out too well. But you'd ask the producer, is our fear warranted? Is that what you wanted to ask?
Yeah. I mean, is it as bad as, you know, I tend not to think because I'm in hopes.
Well,
he's going to come fix everything.
I think he will in 2024. But is it as bad? Yeah, I think it is. Because just think about this in things that nobody's going to argue. I don't think anybody would argue with me about this. You say, is our country on the edge of an energy crisis? And the answer is yes. Is it of our own creation or the government's creation? And the answer is yes. So we're going to be deliberately short of energy. We've deliberately decided to short ourselves on energy at a time when we need it. Are we going to be short on food? Well, even Joe Biden says we're going to be short on food. And we've got American farmers who are saying, you've raised the cost of planting my crops so much, I can't afford to do it. I don't have the fertilizer I need, and I need that diesel to be able to plant the crops and harvest them. So that's a fear. So if we're worried about having enough food and enough energy, yeah, I think the fear is warranted.
Now, do you think that maybe in 2024, what do you think our chances are of bouncing back?
I think Donald Trump, if you remember the tail end of the Jimmy Carter years, when America was in big trouble for energy, for interest rates, for inflation, for everything else, it took several years of Ronald Reagan's calm leadership to be able to bring things back. So it's not going to come back instantly. So if you say, well, if we get a Republican Congress this year and we get Donald Trump as president in 2024, figure 2026 by the time things start to unravel the damage done by this evil president. Let's go to Scott. Hey, Scott, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
A long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I was one that got married to a Filipina, and I heard that guy talking about had a hard time with his 90-day fiance.
Yeah.
Pizza. I researched both, and I found that it was easier to get married out of the country and get a K-2 spousal visa.
Hmm. What? What? Well, I don't know the particulars. I mean, if you say, okay, I'll come to your country, I'll marry you, and then apply for a spousal visa, how long does that take? Do you know?
Well, at the time, they said 2 years.
And but, so your fiancé waits out of the country for 2 years. You go back home. Is that the idea?
Yes. Yeah. Now, the other advantage of getting a spousal visa is when you get here with a spousal visa, it comes with a Social Security card and a green card, where the 90-day visa does not.
But you also have to factor into that, if he went that direction and started that process now, he goes over and gets married, then his new wife has to spend the next 2 years away from him in a foreign country waiting for their to be reunited right. with her husband?
Right. Now, someone gave me a tip to call one of our senators.
Huh.
And I kind of make a joke out of it because I say, God believe and use a Democrat. But so I called this senator's office, and he had someone special that handles and helps you. I got her here in 11 months because he got in and helped me.
That sounds like that may be one possibility for the young man who called from Enumclaw asking about his fiance. Scott, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. And a thanks to the Federation for American Immigration Reform for putting on Feet to the Fire. We've been coming for 15 years. We're glad for the support of Butcher Boys as well, and also Pro Automotive and Diesel, who sponsored the special broadcast the last 2 days. Glad to be with you. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.